Welcome to the Finishing School Podcast, a discussion with and for women about identity, transitions through life stages, how to figure out who you want to be when you grow up, and all the things we didn't learn about in school. In short, it's a sometimes spiritual, sometimes silly look at how to be a grown woman. Whether you're becoming a mom for the first time or about to be an empty nester, modern womanhood and motherhood is complex, and the questions and conflicts we face with shifting roles and desires are many. Don't have your midlife crisis alone. Join me. I'm your host, Jessica Euler, and I'm stewarding this conversation on the brink of asking many of these questions in my own life. As my kids get older, my role as a mother changes, and as I have more time to reflect on who I am in the world, I'm surrounded by friends in the same boat. And I know if we're talking about these issues, odds are you are too.
As women, like, we carry the weight of our families or of our, I mean, whether you have a family, your own, you know, family, or whether you are someone's daughter or sister or whatever, like, I think it's just natural that we tend to kind of carry those things. And then you add like faith in, where we're taught to be givers and not to be selfish, then it becomes very complicated. Yeah. and then as a Black woman, there's like a whole nother layer to that. I'm not subscribing to any of that. Sorry. Because I'm just like, yo.
I recorded this conversation with my friend Tosh at the beginning of this year, before the pandemic and before George Floyd's death and the eruption of this national conversation on a much more wide scale, and the protests that have erupted. So that is why these issues are obviously missing from the conversation and why you might cringe when you hear Tosh cough a few times. Nevertheless, talking about self-care and well-being is as important as ever. Maybe even more so in these stressful times. I, like many of you, are listening to and learning from Black voices right now, and I want to use my platform to amplify Black voices in my community. You can see Tosh's work at ikeandtosh.com, and on Instagram, you can follow her at It's Tosh Haynes. And of course, I'll have those in on the show page. Tosh also recently launched a lifestyle blog at wisdomandcourage.com, where she writes about motherhood, travel, entrepreneurship, and general local happenings, along with just a lot of lifestyle inspiration. And I would encourage you to follow her. She just posted a live on her Instagram feed about racism and anti-racism, and there's some really helpful comments and questions in there that she's responding to, so go give that a listen. I hope you enjoy this interview with Tosh, and check out all the resources that she is putting out into the world right now. So I am in the studio with Tosh.
Hey, girl.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I'm going to try not to cough up my lung.
You can cough up your lung. It's okay.
Okay.
We're casual around here.
Oh, man. Until they're at the gym listening and I'm like, in their ears.
It's all right. I burped in my first one.
Oh, good.
I didn't even edit it out.
Ooh, you're a real one. I love it. I love it.
We're just hanging out, having coffee, having a chat.
This is the first time that I've done a podcast in person, so it's weird to like look at you.
I know.
I'm
just
like,
pretend
this
the mic
is so
isn't
strange.
There.
We'll I know.
Just, you know, or we can pretend like we're on the phone. I guess.
Yeah.
I can go in the other room and call
pretend
you.
Like, okay. I'm just gonna look out the window.
Okay,
like you're
look
not
out
here.
The window at the garden. Well, tell us about yourself. Would you introduce yourself?
Yes. Okay. So I am Tosh. I am a mom and a wife and an entrepreneur.
There you are.
I hate having to give introductions because I never want to be known for like what I do.
Yeah.
And I think that is hard for women sometimes to introduce themselves without saying like all the things they do.
Yes.
So I'm kind of working on that. But I think I'll just lead with I am a mom and a wife and an entrepreneur, and I really believe in like the value of people And I try to live my life to uplift and to help connect people to their dreams.
Ooh, that is so good.
And then I do a bunch of stuff that,
yeah, you do,
you know, is fun and that has made a really great life for me. Mm-hmm. But I don't always like to talk about it because it's not who I am.
I really love that so much. So I think that is perfect for this audience because we are talking about those questions of identity,
yeah,
and what we do and how we define ourselves.
Yeah. That's kind of like a new, just a new way of like existing in the world for me. Just because I had this like moment, which I'm sure we'll talk about, in life that shifted things for me. And I just realized that the things that I did weren't the things that were most important to me. They were just things that I did. And so, yeah, I just don't want to be, I don't want to put so much value on them because I'm more than them.
Absolutely.
So
I love that.
Yeah.
I've seen that shift in you, by the way.
Thank you.
I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, why don't, that's a perfect segue into a little bit of your story. Could you give us just sort of the, you know, Reader's Digest version for those who don't know you?
Oh my gosh.
What happened in your life to precipitate this shift?
In my life. Okay, well, I've had a lot of years in life. I'm going to be 38, but right before, when I was 34, almost a year, 2-3 years ago, I got sick with the flu, except that I didn't have insurance, so I was going to urgent care and nobody really was diagnosing me, so I didn't know what I had. They just kept saying it was a virus and that it would go away, but it never went away, and it turned into pneumonia. And what ends up happening when you get like the flu or the flu virus, which is what I had, if it's not dealt with immediately and if you're not like doing what you need to do to take care of yourself, it can cause like a lot of inflammation in your body and attack your organs. And this flu got into my heart and attacked my heart and sent me into congestive heart failure. And I spent 16 days in the hospital and almost died. And it was a really scary time. And because I was so healthy before I got sick and because I was taking care of my body, like running and things like that, I didn't die. But had I not, and it was weird because I feel like the Lord had kind of directed me to kind of take my health seriously a couple years earlier. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty committed to like eating well and working out and stuff. And I feel like it was preparation for this. Had I not been doing all of those things, I would have died. There's just no question.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah.
Did you know, did you have any idea that the flu could turn into this?
I have learned a lot about the flu in the last 3 years.
I've learned a lot from your story because I tend to be one who's like, yeah, it's just a cold. It's just whatever, you know.
Yeah, and
drink some water.
It's wild because I did not, and I just did this media tour where I'm sharing my story, and I didn't realize how different a cold and the flu were. Like, I thought the flu was something that everybody got all the time. It wasn't a big deal, but no, that is not the case.
Yeah.
The flu is very unique. It has very unique symptoms. And it's not something to play with. Like, when you find out you have the flu, you need to act fast.
Okay, that's really interesting, and this is a little bit of a segue, but could you just give us a few pointers
like
on
things?
Like what makes the flu different from a cold and what to look out for? Because I feel like I didn't really know that either.
Yeah, okay. So usually when you have a cold, it's a lot of congestion like in your nose, in your head, you know, snotty nose, things like that. The flu doesn't act like that. You don't have like a sneeze or congestion. And the flu usually starts with a cough. And it's in the chest. And then you'll have like a headache. Headaches aren't usually a symptom of like a cold kind of thing, but it is a flu thing. So if you have like a light headache or like just weird head stuff happening and a cough, then you probably should go to the doctor. Those are like the first two like main things. And then generally with the flu, you'll have a fever. With a cough, you don't. Or with a cold, you don't generally get a fever. You just kind of feel like it's almost like an allergy attack with a cold versus the flu, chills, muscle aches. Those are not things that come with colds.
Yeah.
So if you have any of those kinds of things happening, you should go and get tested for the flu.
So I want to go back to you being in the hospital. And I know that that incident, that period of time for you was a watershed, and that the way you were living your life before that compared to the way you were living your life after that were very different.
Right.
Tell me what happened to your sense of self, to your perspective on your family, on your priorities, and how you want to live your life when you, like,
versus before and now?
Yeah, versus after.
So I would say, like, before the flu, I definitely... I'm not a millennial. I was born in 82, so I sit somewhere in between like Gen X and millennial. I'm a cusper, but I definitely have been influenced by that whole millennial culture of like achieve, 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 hustle, hustle, hustle. We must be everything that we're going to be before we're 30 years old, which is like the most ridiculous thing ever in life. So I was hustling. And the reason why when I got sick, when I got sent home or whatever, and I knew I felt bad. I mean, I had stopped eating. I was like sweating everywhere. People were telling me that I looked bad, but I was like, yeah. I'll rest soon. I just need to get through this, or I just need to do this one thing. And I'm like, I have a fever. I didn't know because I didn't take a test, but I'm sweating and like I look like bad, you know? And I'm just like, yeah, but I promised these girls that I was going to do this event, or I promised this person that I was going to go to this show. So I just would never slow down. I didn't eat for 3 days before I wasn't hungry and I was so busy that I didn't notice. Ah, do you know what I mean? Right. So that's kind of how I was before. It was just like, there was always something that needed to be done. I couldn't stop. It didn't matter how I felt. It didn't matter mentally how I felt. It didn't even matter that I wasn't actually happy doing the things that I was doing.
Wow.
I just felt like I had set these goals and set this standard for my life based on what I felt was expected from other people's ideas or opinions of where I should be.
Wow.
And when I got sick and I was in the hospital bed and they were like, you've got to do a last will and testament and you've got to do a power of attorney. And if this doesn't get better in the next 24 hours, we're going to put you on the transplant list because you're going to need a new heart.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like not thinking about any of that other stuff.
Yeah. And you're not thinking about your Instagram following.
Not thinking about my Instagram following. I'm not thinking about the degree that I worked so hard to get. I'm not thinking about the money in my bank account. I'm not thinking about any of that. Like I was like, oh my God. I'm about to die and my baby is 4 years old and who is going to raise her and what are we going to do? And, you know, what was I doing with all this time? I remember at one point when I was in the hospital, they told me that if I made it out of the hospital, the likelihood that I would be able to have another baby was zero.
Wow.
And I was like, what?
I don't remember that.
Oh, it's a big, huge part of my story. And it was devastating because I had chosen not to have more kids because I was too busy achieving.
Too busy working, yeah.
And I was just like, what is this? Like, I would have had, like, so many more kids if I thought I had. You know, it just, all of these things. And so when I left the hospital, just anything that I didn't want to do anymore, I stopped doing. And all the things that I wanted to do, I didn't. I just was like, I'm going to do them because it was just like a really big, huge wake up call of like, I don't have forever.
Yeah.
I don't. What am I waiting for? Like, what are we waiting for? And so I just started living. I started like doing things. And that is how I've been living my life since. And I don't set goals. Like, I don't have a list of things that I want to achieve anymore. I just have I have guidelines for how I want to live my life and how I want to feel. And if the things that I want to do allow me to feel a certain way or get me closer to just like this, these values for my life, then it lines up. Yes. And that's kind of where I am. So I don't do like New Year's resolutions or like a list of goals and stuff like that. Because when I look at my life, I'm pretty proud of the things that I've achieved. I don't think it's about that anymore. I feel like it's like, what do I want to leave? Like, what kind of legacy am I leaving? And what kind of memories do I want to have? And what do I want my story of my life to represent?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I make decisions about my life now.
I love that. So how do you feel like, how has it changed your decision-making kind of on a daily, weekly, monthly
basis?
Bro,
I say no to everything. No, can't do it. Sorry.
Good.
Nope.
Yeah.
Can't do it. No, that's not going to work.
I
really
love that question. How do I want to feel? Not what do I want to do? What do I want to accomplish? Because, and you know, I'm all about the anti-hustle. Because I think so much gets lost in that mentality. And when I say hustle, I don't mean hard work. I mean that lie of you have to be doing. You have to be achieving.
Get, grab, 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 have, more.
Instead of stopping asking yourself what your own personal version of success, what does it look like? And how do I want to feel about my life? Not what numbers do I measure my life by here or in my bank account or whatever, but what are the things that I need to thrive?
Well, and here's the thing about all of that, right? Like it's like money. Well, a lot of people have all this money and they're not doing anything with it.
Right.
It's not like they're like going and like enjoying their life or whatever. Sure. It's like, they're like, well, we're going to work really hard. And then when we retire, we're going to go do this stuff. But like Kobe Bryant probably thought he was going to be doing a bunch of stuff too. Right. And 41 years old, like we do not know how much time we have. So why are we not living now?
Right now.
And that is just where I am. And like, oh, I would love for my bank account to be full of money. But I also know that all it takes is like one client or one decision on my part. Like my life could be completely different in a year based off of one decision that I make. So like I cannot get hung up on what things look like right now.
Right.
And I can't wait.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I think that that question, how do I want to feel, it gives us permission to ask ourselves, like, what does it look like to take care of me?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? What do I need? And we were talking a little bit about this earlier, you know, just for me, I've realized in order to thrive, I want to be, there's certain things I want to be doing during my week, but I also need margin. And if I don't have that margin, it doesn't matter if I'm doing all these other things that are my, you know, touchstones, my things that give me life, whether it's working with clients or writing or exercising or all these things that I'm juggling and want and are important parts of my life. But if I'm too busy, I'm too worn out to give to my family. I'm too worn out to show up in my relationships, in my marriage, in my friendships. And so I just know personally that's something I've learned. Like I can't schedule from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that 100%.
If we don't ask ourselves that, if we don't, you know, give ourselves permission to not hustle, it kind of doesn't matter. Like, we're not able to enjoy it.
But you're also not even able to see, like, what it is that you need to, because there's not room or space for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or to even, like, pivot, because that also changes, right?
Yeah, because there's momentum. If you are so full, if your days are so full, there's like a certain momentum and you really don't have time to think about it.
Right.
Because you're too busy doing.
Right.
So I want to get to this bigger idea of self-care
because
it's such a hot topic and
buzzword.
It is a buzzword. And I think, you know, there's like a growing awareness and education that self-care is important.
You know why?
Why?
It's because all those people that told us that we should hustle are now dealing with the consequences of that hustle.
That,
and now they're changing their whole talk.
That's
and
so
I'm like,
true.
You're the person that told me to do it this way.
Oh my gosh.
That's why.
Have you heard of the nap ministry?
I feel like I've just recently heard of that.
Okay, I'm going to send it to you. It's this.
It's like, isn't it an Instagram account or
it's
something?
It's an Instagram account,
yeah.
But it's like a whole like anti-hustle movement. And it's the whole idea is, I'll see if I can find it, because they just shared something about how the hustle and that whole mentality is like anti-womanist and anti-feminist, and it kind of keeps us it keeps us oppressed.
I could see that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like just grinding is not productive, right? Grind culture doesn't serve us. You don't belong in it. So resting becomes an act of resistance.
Ooh.
Yes.
I'm here for it.
Yep.
Make sure you share that to your story.
I will.
I'm going to share it too.
Okay, so let's talk about what self-care is and what it isn't.
Yeah.
Because I think the message that often gets played out with self-care is, to me, it feels very superficial. It feels like, yeah, get your nails done. Buy this product, you know, buy this face mask so you can give yourself a 10-minute facial. It's more about consuming or just like that whole wellness culture. It kind of becomes about privilege, it becomes about money, it becomes about stuff instead of intuition and learning to silence a lot of those
pause
voices
and like listen to yourself
and what you need, connecting with God. So what do you think when you hear the word self-care and in our culture, and what does it mean to you?
I think that you did a great job of like covering that. I think those other things can be forms of like self-care, like forms of like taking care of yourself, but I don't think that it's real self-care. I think self-care is like sitting with yourself and allowing yourself to like inform you of like where you are and what you need, you know, and like taking the time to pause and really just go like, is this thing like serving me? If it's not, like, what is it about it that is, like, taking the time to really reflect and think about, like, the choices that we're making and why we're making them. And also taking the time to sit in how we feel about things, whether good or bad, and not rushing those processes. Mm-hmm. And also understanding that emotions and feelings can exist at the same time. And you don't have to make a choice about things or feel guilty or bad about how you feel regarding anything. As a mother of girls, for me, self-care is revisiting some of, like, I was raised in foster care. I aged out. I have a really complicated upbringing and story. Yeah. And I'm raising sisters, but grew up an only child. I'm raising, you know, girls who have a very healthy, cool family situation. I'm raising kids that are living a life that I have absolutely no idea how to identify with, which means that I have to work on my own traumas and my own like hurts so that I'm not imposing those things on them.
Yeah.
You know, and not dealing with them or treating them or mothering them from like a broken place because they're not me and they don't have those experiences. So I think like self-care is a lot of like inner work and a lot of reflection and stuff.
Well, and you know what's interesting about that is I think on a superficial level, we think self-care is going to always feel good, right? Mm-hmm. Like self-care is going to feel like pampering or doing something that makes us feel good. And everything that you just talked about, or a lot of what you just talked about, is really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Even learning to sit in silence with ourselves. And, you know, if you are a person of faith, maybe before God, like those spiritual contemplative practices, they can be very uncomfortable.
And hard.
And very
take
hard.
A lot of practice and discipline.
Absolutely.
It's very tough.
It is. But all of that hard inner work is the thing that moves us toward wholeness and ultimately to a more full version of ourselves.
I agree.
But it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I think silence and solitude are very uncomfortable for us.
I agree with that.
But it is something that I crave, like air right now.
I feel the same way. I'm like an extroverted extrovert. Like I love people and being around people. But I'm finding too that even I need like peace. Just a moment to like gather myself, you know. And I don't have the same. I was texting my sister, my best friend. And I was just like, man, I don't have that same level of productivity that I used to have, you know. And she texts back and was like, you know, there's grace in this season. And I believe that's true. But I also think that, you know, it's okay to acknowledge that, like, I'm not functioning in the same way as I used to. And that's okay.
And that's totally okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, and when you think back to that person and the, you know, the quote unquote productivity versus the inner life compared to now.
Oh, yeah. She's a mess.
Right. And that's, I'm finding the older I get, the more attuned I am to the inner needs. And I feel the same. Like I cannot just keep going. I cannot just keep pouring out, without that pause, without really having time to reflect, to sit alone, to write, to read, to do the things that restore me. I just cannot keep going. I cannot power through in the same way
before
it really affects my relationships. And even like on a just a purely work level, you know, shooting for clients, whether it's a business or a family, there's an emotional toll.
Absolutely.
And I invest so much emotionally and I need to be able to show up emotionally. I cannot phone it in. And so if I'm not recharging and if I'm not getting that time alone, it takes a toll on my work. And
I
think that's
way.
What's interesting is the productivity actually like truly suffers. I can't produce, I can't create in the same way if I'm not attuned to
what
you
your
know,
needs
myself.
Are and what has to happen. We were talking about this. I mean, I have to have like a pretty pristine space to write, to dream, to vision. And if I see like a thread on the floor, I can't think straight. It makes me crazy.
Yeah.
And it's probably seems like really like crazy and wild to people, but like that's what I need. And it's just understanding like I can't work in this space and fully show up and give like my very best and making space for that to happen and also communicating that too.
Yeah.
You know?
And making that need known and, and making it a priority. And it's okay to say like, I have to have a clean house before I'm going to get to work.
Yeah. And you need me to get to work because we all want to eat.
Yeah.
So let's go. Come on.
Let's go wash those dishes.
Yep. Let's do it.
You know who we're talking about. Yeah. I was actually just having a conversation with a friend earlier this week about, she was saying how she felt, you know, just creatively in a rut. She's a photographer as well. And she feels like she's been really uninspired and she took some time to just like clean and organize her office. And there's something very concrete
about the weight, man.
Connecting our physical spaces to match our interior spaces. And I think I've experienced it so many times when we have clutter, when we have that chaos in our space, it totally shows up in our mental space and in our output and in creativity. And when we remove the clutter, when we get rid of the things that aren't essential, it creates room in our minds, in our souls, for that creativity and that energy to like flow in so that we can get to work. There's such a correlation.
No, there is 100%. So I got some work to do.
Yeah, we all do. It's an ongoing battle for sure. Okay, let's talk about the idea that self-care can be selfish. I think at least for some of us, that might be the fear. You know, when we, if we focus too much on self-care, that maybe we're not focusing on serving or dying to ourselves or, you know, showing up for other people. And how do we walk that balance? And when do we say, okay, maybe we've gone too far and we need to dial back and like set our needs aside for a little bit? Like, I think, you know, having young kids is a season where you really have to ask this question a lot because there's always somebody else's needs to be met. But
always.
Then you do have to take care of yourself. And how do you do that? How do we explore that?
Well, I feel like as women, like, we carry the weight of our families or of our, I mean, whether you have a family, your own, you know, family, or whether you are someone's daughter or sister or whatever, like, I think it's just natural that we tend to kind of carry those things. And then you add like faith in where we're taught to be givers and not to be selfish, then it becomes very complicated.
Yeah.
and then as a Black woman, there's like a whole nother layer to that. but I'm not subscribing to any of that. Sorry. Cause I'm just like, yo, you guys, I'm so sorry.
You're fine.
I just feel like, no, like I want to serve my family and I want to serve the people in my life who matter to me, my community. And the only way that I can do that is by serving myself first. And that's just a hard line for me. So I don't even feel like I need to like find balance. It's just for me, that's just how it's gonna go. Like, yeah. That's just what it is. Like, I will be able to give you 100% when I can give myself 100% first. So I need to do what I need to do, and then I'm gonna come back to you and I got you. But I have to take care of myself first. And I just feel like, you know, Jesus went away and he did what he needed to do for himself. And he left people. I mean, he didn't show up for Lazarus. He took his time getting there. Yeah. Like, I think we have an example of someone, if you are a believer, you know, who valued self-care, who valued connecting with the Father, like taking time away. I think that's our example. And I think that alone for me is like enough.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he went away and he prayed and he did what he needed to do to make sure that he was doing what was best for him so that he could go out and be what he needed to be, right? So I just don't feel like I don't feel like there needs to be a justification for it. Like, I just don't. And so I don't know how to tell someone how to balance that, because I mean, we are our own people. Like we are the only people that can take care of ourselves the way that we need to be taken care of. And like, that just has to be the priority.
Yeah.
That's just the way it has to be.
Yeah. Do you feel like having your second child changed what self-care looks like for you?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Cause she's nutty.
she's so delicious. Okay. Though, so well, we forgive her for everything.
My goodness. That one gets on my last nerve. Having two, I mean, I'm talking to someone who has double of mine, but still like, it's still an adjustment for me. And I'm always like, and I hate that we do that. We're like, well, I don't have as many as you. No, so blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, like it's my situation and it is so right. Not that you're making me feel that way, but I hate that we do that to each other. Yeah. Right. And we're
there's no comparing.
Yeah.
Like two kids, four kids, eight kids, it's all a lot of work. One kid, it's all a lot of work.
That one to two.
Yes, it's a huge, I think that's the biggest adjustment actually.
And then she is so complete, of course she is, she's her own person, but she is so completely different from Wisdom that she just is so much, like all the time. What it has done for me in terms of self-care is I need it even more.
Yes.
Because she requires so much.
Of course.
And so when I'm done, I'm done. And I cast a, I'm done. Like, that's it.
So what does that look like?
That means that I am leaving. I am, yeah. Like, I'm no one's mom right now.
Okay.
I am Tasha, and I need to go do whatever Tasha needs to do so she can come back and be somebody's mom, right?
Yep.
I think it has become even more important to me because she does require so much and takes so much out of me.
Yeah.
And I'm not the kind of mom that like when I'm away from my kids, I like miss them and think about them. Yes. Do I love them with my whole entire heart? Yeah. But when I'm away from them, I'm away from them.
Yeah.
And this is my time and I use my time wisely because I do have to go back to them.
Yep.
And so, she is a new person in our life, a new command on my life that is a lot.
Yeah.
So I make sure that I take care of myself because she is a lot.
Yeah. And I think that's such a perfect picture. I mean, when I think back to having babies and I had like three at once, basically.
Yeah, you are my hero.
No, I'm nobody's hero. Like I had a ton of help. Because there was no way with a husband deployed and three little kids, like I could not physically do it on my own. But even as they got older and I remember that feeling exactly what you're talking about of like, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
It's affecting everybody negatively. Like I'm doing no good here.
Mm-hmm.
I am not being loving. I'm not being patient. I'm not being kind. And I don't feel like I had the resources or maybe the wisdom to say, I need a break. Like, I think I felt like I just have to keep doing this and I should do it well. And mm-hmm. I should get a 3-course dinner on the table.
Yeah, no,
I'm not
from that tradition.
I think that's really wise is what I'm saying, because I felt really burnt out and
but I think I could have been before, like I would have been, but I know what happens when I'm empty.
Yes.
And because I know that, so I have this near death experience that informs almost every decision I make now. And I know what makes me anxious. I know what stresses me out.
Yeah.
And I don't allow myself to approach those things.
Yeah.
Whereas you before, have to pay attention. Right. Like, and it's not because I'm still sick. It's just because I don't want to be sick. It's because I want a long life on earth and I don't want to, and I want a long, like, prosperous, happy life on earth.
Right.
And so there are things in my life that require work and that are stressful for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I choose those things. Like I'm choosing to show up to those things. So that means that I don't have time for anything extra.
Yeah.
You know, and I know the situations for me in my life that are worth the work that they require.
Yeah.
And not many things are. And coming into 2020 even, I cut a lot of people off. I stopped a lot of things because I'm just like, my capacity for stress is very low these days.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm choosing to deal with, which means that I cannot deal with this other stuff. And that's just what it comes down to.
But I think that's the heart of self-care.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what you're saying is asking yourself and knowing yourself and what you need and what is going to be stressful for you and what to say no to. And ultimately, that's what we're talking about, and that's what we need to get to as women instead of,
I agree.
You know, what is somebody else's picture of self-care? Is it going to the spa? Is it, you know, having a glass of wine? Like, right. There's all these aspects of self-care that also look like self-medication.
That's so true.
Like,
yeah.
Have a pint of ice cream.
That's
have a,
so
not
true.
That, I mean, believe me.
No,
I
honey,
can down
I would
ice cream,
tear ice cream up
yeah,
to this
absolutely.
Point. I actually did Whole 30 in the month of December.
Twice, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I did like Whole 45.
Okay. Hey.
But I actually eat mostly like Whole 30 now just by choice because I feel so good.
Right.
I did that because I am an emotional eater.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, I didn't do it for that reason. I did it for courage, but because she has eczema. But I also was like, this is really great practice with the stress of life to see like what other ways I can handle stress or how I can like deal with my stress. And I've learned to talk about it a lot more and to like speak about it and to be, I'm a Taurus and I don't know, I'm either a 2 or 8 on the Enneagram. We're trying to figure that out. But
oh,
anyway.
I
think I'm an 8 too.
You're an 8.
I'm definitely 8, but I heard that Christians, like Christian women, sometimes show us 2s.
Oftentimes. If you are given that, you know, that service is instilled in you.
Yeah.
I mean, you definitely show up and serve in a lot of ways, but I think you're an 8.
I think I'm an 8 too. When I tested 10 years ago, I was an 8. And then I took the test a couple years, or last year or the year before, and I was a 2. And I'm like, some of the 2 stuff sounds right to me. But I think it's mostly just because, like, I'm a leader and have community.
It could be your role
more
than your personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I don't even know what point I was trying to make. I lost it. But
45.
Yeah. So it just has been really nice to be like, this is bothering me. And having to logically think about why it's bothering me and, like, break it down versus, like, allowing just, like, the wave to crash and then being like, I need something to eat to feel better. And then I feel worse.
Yes.
And then that whole spiral.
Ugh.
So it's really, like, helped me to kind of be more logical about my emotions and my feelings and to, like, address them and stuff. But
yeah. I think there's something really healthy, too, about even learning to recognize our emotions, you know, and identify them and name them and say, like, I feel really hopeless right now because it's been raining for a million weeks. And then, oh, I'm not exercising because I haven't been outside running because it's pouring and there's no light. And then I want to eat ice cream. And
so one of my self-care
and...
rituals is I know that I live in Washington State and I know that it's going to look like this. And so I have this rule that we always have to have enough miles or enough money in the bank account so that if I need to leave, I can. And that's
I love this rule so much.
that is my rule. And that's because that is like depression is something that I've struggled with in the past. So it's just one of those things that like this over time and not being able to escape it because we can't afford it or there's no like that's going to be a problem for me.
Yep.
And I know that.
Yeah.
So
I told you I'm looking at buying those tickets to Palm Springs.
Just go.
I'm just going to go by myself.
Yeah, and sit in the sun. That's all you need. And drink cocktails and just live your life.
All right.
Your
I will.
Best life.
That's self-care for me right now.
Yeah.
Honestly. Going to Palm Springs. Oh, man. Well, this is so good. I love so much of what you said. And I think we need to keep this conversation going as women. I think we've internalized so many messages about self-care and about serving others that sometimes become more cultural than, you know, something we really need to hold on to. So,
yeah,
especially as mothers, of course, because there's always somebody who needs something. And it's hard to balance and juggle everybody's needs.
It's true.
And there are times, you know, I think where as our kids get older, I know the needs are so different, but they're still there. And when I look back to when my kids were your age or, you know, having little kids, it's so obvious what the needs are. Like, you don't really have to think about.
Right. Whereas when you get into these high school girls, the high school students.
Yeah.
It's unspoken.
It is
unspoken. And it's having to dig and get the treasure out.
And it's the emotional care over the physical.
Which is a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And you have to really show up.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be ready to make eye contact and you kind of have to be ready to talk whenever they are. And so I find for me, like I have to be in a good place emotionally and physically and taking care of myself so that I can show up for them and I can be ready to talk when they're ready to talk.
So it is 2020, and my hope is that we'll come up with some kind of serum that keeps children from growing up. And then I'll just have a 1 year old and a 7 year old for the rest of my life.
That actually sounds awful. I am telling you, you have so much to look forward to.
No, I know. Well, you know, I worked with the girls.
I know.
So I mean, I'm not a person that's not excited about the teen years. Yeah. I feel like we're going to be great teen parents.
Yeah. You guys are going to be so fun.
But I am also just like not in a hurry at all.
No.
I feel like the last year of my life like flew by.
Because it did.
Man, so
that's how a baby's first year works.
Man,
it's a time warp.
It is
for sure. Okay, well, wrapping up, tell us briefly where people can find you and what new exciting things you have recently launched.
Okay, well, you can find me or my photography work at Ike and Tosh anywhere on the internet. So it's just Ike and Tosh, kind of like Ike and Tina, but without the fighting. Nope, the fighting's still there, but not the abuse, not the abuse.
Yeah.
And then I just launched a lifestyle blog called wisdomandcourage.com, named after my girls. And it really is honestly more of like a letter to them. Mm. I feel like it's just a really great way for us to share about our family and the things that we've done or that we're learning. And I think it'll be a really sweet like gift to them one day. But I do talk about entrepreneurship and travel, family travel especially. Like you, we travel overseas a lot with our family. I talk about faith, and I do some like influencer work. So I'll share like products that I love. And what other things do just talk about a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. So wisdomandcourage.com.
Yay.
And then on Instagram or anywhere on the internet, it's Tosh Haynes. Like it's Tosh Haynes.
Yes.
One word.
And I'll try to put that all in the show notes.
In the show notes. You're fancy.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how to do show notes.
you're gonna have it done by this episode. I can feel it.
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad we finally got to do this.
Me too. I want your scarf too. I've been staring at it this whole time.
I got it in Spain.
Oh, well, I have to go back and get one.
Yeah, let's go.
That'd be
fun. Let's go. Let's plan a trip.
That'd be fun.
Okay.
See.
Yeah, it could happen. Okay. Well, thank you, friend.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Yay, we did it.
It's not very impressive when you've done it and you've sacrificed so much to do it. Relationships, people.
Right.
Like, so you're telling the whole world all the things that you've accomplished in this short amount of time, and everybody's like looking at you and wishing that they were like you, but they don't know the cost.
Right.
And that is dangerous. And I don't think that's fair to people. You can do all these things, but I'm not going to tell you that I almost lost this and I almost died and I almost blah, blah, blah. And I wasn't sleeping. I was waking up at like 5 a.m. and going to bed at like 2 a.m. And I, you know, had a like whatever. Like, we're just not being honest about that stuff. And I think it sets like unreal expectations to people who are looking to us as the example, the standard.
Like, if she can do it, I should be able to.
I should
to
be
do
able
it.
To do it,
or
and
I
not knowing the cost.
It.
Yeah. And it's just, that's not fair.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, if you want to know what I've done, you can get on the internet and see.
Yeah.
And you won't always be able to find it, but I don't feel like I need to do that. But it does feel weird when you're like sitting with people who are like your comps or whatever on a lineup or whatever, and everybody's like so proud to run down all of your things, and then I'm always just sitting there like, I'm Tosh, I'm from Seattle, I'm a photographer, and I'm so like, I just am so, I don't do, I'm so bad. So we're at Imogene and I'm so bad about like promoting us and bragging about all the cool stuff that we've done that nobody like even knows who we are, and I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. So like, we don't like, we're so under the radar, I feel like, in comparison to other people who speak who are just like us.
Yeah.
And we've done either as much or more as those other people, but nobody would ever know because I'm so... And then Ike is not gonna... He never says anything, so... I don't know.
Don't you think there's something connected to the hustle when it comes to, like, the self-promotion piece? It's exhausting.
I just think it's whack. And I feel like it either is going to make people like look at you and they're going to be like, oh my gosh, all googly eyed over you, or it's going to make people feel really bad. And I don't want to be a part of any of that. And that's a really big part of it too. Like, people are always trying to figure out where they fit in comparison to you. And so if you're telling everyone everything that you've done, then people are going to be like, oh, she's not that impressive because I've done this. Or they're going to be like, dang, I suck. Like, and that was a huge reason why I never wanted to share on social media, is because I don't want people comparing up or down.
Yep.
But I feel like the Lord was able to kind of give me a new perspective of the power of sharing, and how I could share in a way that was helpful and not harmful. And so that is what I'm doing now. And that I've seen, like, that has been positive and successful. But none of it has anything to do with what I do or who I am. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I think that's so true, that comparison trap. And we are trying to, it's so tempting to, like, rank ourselves.
It's also a huge reason why I don't like to share work, because I feel like clients are like, well, how come no one's commenting on our family? Or why is no one talking about my senior pictures? They gave that other senior, and I was just like, I'm contributing to this.
Wow.
When I am saying, look at this beautiful. Yeah, I just felt so convicted by it. And it's why I stopped sharing my work. And I had talked to Ike about sharing our work and turning the comments off. I felt like it's not anybody else. I don't need you to tell me that the picture looks pretty or that it looks good. Like, I need you to know that we're still in business.
Yeah.
And
you can still hire us.
You can still hire us. But, like, your opinion on my clients
is not,
it doesn't matter. Like, whether their wedding is pretty enough or they're, you know. And I just feel like sometimes I feel like I help perpetuate some of those same things that we're trying to get away from by saying, look at this beautiful girl, or look at this beautiful wedding, or look at this bride and groom, because not everybody's bride and groom is, I wouldn't look like that at a wedding. I couldn't afford some of the weddings that we shoot,
you know? Right.
So that has been, like, a real big, huge struggle for me too, which is why I haven't been posting on social media, because I feel like my client shouldn't have to go up against the social media fire.
It's not, like, we shouldn't put our clients in this, like, popularity contest.
Yeah.
And I've never understood when I hear photographers talk about, like, oh my gosh, I just booked this wedding and the couple is so gorgeous. As if that gives them more value, because it's going to be, you know, it's going to get more response online, or it just doesn't make sense to me, because to me, we are serving them.
Mm-hmm.
We are there to tell their story and show them that they are important.
No matter who it is.
Period.
No matter the budget, no matter what's going
on.
And it's just a mess.
More expensive wedding or a more expensive gown or a more beautiful bride does not matter any more to me than somebody having a backyard wedding.
Yeah, it shouldn't.
No.
Love is love.
Yeah.
Or it's supposed to be, at least.
Right. Yeah. And if it's not about me as a photographer, then it shouldn't matter one bit.
Nope, I agree. That's just been, like, my struggle even with that. It's just, like, how am I, like, basically perpetuating this struggle with people? Like, what are things that we can do differently, you know, as content creators even?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
It's hard to feel like we don't have to keep feeding the machine.
Oh, I don't.
But we don't.
Yeah. I don't.
Yeah.
We're still, I mean, I've posted 9 times in the last 2 years on the Ike and Tosh page.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's not impacted our business in any way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think we all are realizing that it's not as, you know, essential as we are led to believe.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this conversation. If you enjoyed it and know a friend who would love it, please, please, please pass it on. Word of mouth is how we can grow this community. Thanks again.